At this point, I think I'm going to hand the video over to Maria to talk about motion capture a little bit. Yeah, go ahead.
Said about digitizing can kind of generalize a lot of things. And I just noticed, like, for instance, changes didn't have a date on it, that a lot of times I think it's really important not only to make the archive accessible through digitization, but to really do what you're talking about, which are the layers of interpretation and kind of historical context. Because one of the things that I remember when I was doing my Lilly Fuller book at Lincoln Center was that they really wanted to say, if it was digitized, just look at the digitized manuscript. But in fact, a lot of the manuscripts are written on the back of stationery from hotels, that there's the kind of material aspect of, you know, the little leather, you know, things that were going on that wouldn't necessarily have been digitized or kind of seen as information, like what gets seen as the dance or what gets seen as important to capture information, I think really has to have a conceptual framework. And a lot of times what I feel is that we spend the money for the technology, but we don't spend the time or the money for that intellectual framing, which seems to me is really crucial. So I just put a plug as a historian for that kind of. I mean, I love all of this possibility, but I feel as if, again, if you don't want it just to be kind of an archival YouTube, then you really need to have people who are doing the intellectual work to shape that material.
And in literary studies, you started doing this where somebody at UC Santa Barbara, it's Alan Liu's Rose Project, where they ideally, in the end, you have a piece of literature and we stop looking at it as this solitary hero and we start looking at all the associative documents that go with it pulled from metadata. And I think that's what you're talking about as well, and looking at, well, where is that stationery and what was the association, the hotel envelope, and why is it written on the back of it? And you can really see the hotel envelope and you can start to pull things out, like what gum was used. You know,
yeah, and also, I mean, the phenomenology of, you know, kind of like the thing that I'm always aware of is in the digital world, there's very little weight. You know what I mean? Like the documents have no weight, the dancing has very little weight, you know, like where is the weight of the thing? And all of those, you know, the smells, the resonances, the kind of implications of, say, the real poster versus the digitized image of the poster is huge in terms of just getting information. I know that there is material that I saw only because I insisted on seeing the real thing that really helped me think about ideas in that book that I would not have gotten to if I had just had digital materials in front of me. So I think it's really important to try to recognize that as we work with kind of more advanced of media formats.
Why don't we turn it over to Maria then to talk about motion capture for a moment, and then I think we'll take a break and go to some of the more process-oriented or cutting-edge things that are happening at various places around the table.
So maybe following up also on your points that you were just making, this is a wiki page from my research center, and it's actually where we internally gathered information as we worked on the Foresight project. But one of the things we knew going into the Foresight project is we were not using motion capture. It was not possible with all the dancers and the tables for reasons that we could talk about if anybody was interested. But one of the first things we did was within our group research movement, we called the movement marks that other choreographers had made to talk about their work, because we had a multidisciplinary group and we wanted to talk about what annotation could be or what notation could be. And so this is, I'm just showing it because we've been talking about it, but this is sort of a small collection we put together internally as visual reference for us to look at what other choreographers had done. And I think it speaks to that idea of there are other important artifacts that exist from the process of making dance that become important to an archive or to a collection from a dancer. This came from an exhibit that was called Tracking, Tracing, Marking, and Pacing and it was published as a catalog, and we just digitized these, kept them internal, so they're not published publicly on the web. But it's just another way of looking at other marks that choreographers and some artists were making to talk about the way in which they're moving within their dance. Mm-hmm. This image we were drawn to just because of the movement. I don't think it has anything to do with dance, but it felt like a very movement-based drawing, and we were really interested in the quality of line here. Then some of Calder's work, too, which seemed to have a lot of motion in his sculptures.
So who's the weak key in here? Who's making the choices of what's in the page?
The researchers that are working on the project. So it's a public wiki internally, and people can add to the wiki, and this is the way we exchange information and keep a record of it.
How are the researchers for the project organized?
It's a group of faculty members from different disciplines as well as graduate students from different disciplines who are working on a common project, and then we will create a project wiki that they are contributing to. And it's pretty deep in this case. This is just all the references we looked at, but here's our Foresight wiki, which you can see is really goes deep in there. And actually, it becomes another object that we didn't think through very well, but would be great to have part of an archive with all this information that's gathered there. But when we were doing it, it just became this really practical vehicle for us to publish information on. But it contains a lot of thinking that's going on between all of us and Bill as we're working through the project. He can see it off-site and contribute to it, too. But a lot of this is just things that right now are not visible to the world. Okay, and then, so just a quick overview of mocap, and I think, again, following along with what everybody else is saying, we consider motion capture only one method of dance documentation and not always a good method, depending on what the situation are. Situation is. At OSU, we also always use video when we motion capture, and a lot of times Waba notation too. Ohio State has a long history of notators in dance, and we honor that tradition and feel that it's important and realize that it needs dance always needs multiple ways of documentation, not one way. Also, as some people have mentioned, we have researchers at OSU who are developing new approaches to movement analysis, and a lot of that is driven by the Department of Defense research, mm-hmm. because there's a lot of research with big money behind it going into movement analysis for surveillance. And mm-hmm. so that is also happening at OSU, but the good part about that is technologies will develop out of that that may benefit the world of dance because of the need or the research dollars that are behind computer scientists making this. So markerless motion capture, motion analysis from video. And it also seems like it could lead to this ability to actually search a video based on what the movement looks like in the picture mm-hmm. that's there, which could be really interesting.
Can I just jump in there and mm-hmm. say, you know, we've gone back and forth about this a lot. There's some really scary stuff that goes on with that in terms of the way that they're capturing, even with the markerless capture and so on, and what they're privileging and identifying as markers. And I just want to say that we feel very conflicted about this, extremely. And we're also basically told by Martha Davis, who has done some work for them, just don't even do it. And the experience that we had in the symposium, one of the scary thing that I was referring to in my list was a guy who was doing movement analysis of pregnant women to decide whether or not there was a bomb under the dress or whether they were really pregnant. And mostly women in the room sitting there going, don't want to be off the charts on that one. So I think that there's some real problems and misconceptions that the defense people have about movement and what you can capture and what you really can't and what the variations are. I just would be really, I just want to say that it's really scary.
Yeah, I don't want to argue what their intentions are. I guess what I was saying is technology will develop mm-hmm. because dollars are there.
Yes.
And there will be some technology that comes out of that that could be useful for better movement analysis in ways that we're interested in using it.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. Okay, here's my fantasy. So maybe you can tell me if it's possible. All right. So my fantasy is that eventually with movement capture and the analysis and the, you know, kind of global range, that you'll be able to walk into like one of those little changing booths or, you know, like a photography kind of thing. And you'll be able to walk in and move and say, I want to know, like there'll be screens around you and you'll say, I want to know what forms of dance use the head in this way.
Absolutely.
And it catches that and then brings up like this and this and this. And you'll be able to tag something and say, you know, I want to know what forms of dance use the pelvis in this way or the hands in this way. You know, and that it'll be this kind of interactive thing where you actually do it on your body, see material, then are able to kind of understand it rather than kind of all of the kind of all visual material and textual, like I'm thinking about kind of textural analysis versus like straight body to body kinds of things. And, you know, and I just, will you soon be able to do that?
Yeah, so MIT developed, and it's the researcher who's now at Ohio State, developed the system. And again, it's not anything that's on the market, where it's an exercise system. You exercise, it says, no, you didn't move your spine quite right, do it like this, and then it shows you how to do it. So those are the kind of technology, yes, those technologies are being developed. I think what you're talking about is absolutely will exist eventually.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, there's the interactivity issue, which is kind of separate from the computer vision research,
mm-hmm.
but eventually those both of those things are possible, and I think that is how you could look through an archive. Here's a movement. I want to know what else is there that's like this kind of thing that I do. Or even, I want to call up this 5 minutes into BB's dance, look at this movement, and say, what other choreographers make movement that look similar to that or look like this for some reason?
I should also say, just for a moment, that it, later on in the afternoon, we're going to have a discussion of things that are frightening, maybe like the defense thing, or other things that we just want to be concerned about, and also things that we want to dream about, like maybe this dance booth. But just for this little bit, let's let Maria get through her presentation, and then we can have this discussion in the afternoon.
So again, just acknowledging the work that the Dance Notation Bureau has done and is doing in Dance Heritage Coalition, because there are important connections also from my university, and we're involved in both of those things. So as most of you know, motion capture, which we often call mocap, is sampling and recording motion of humans, animals, and inanimate objects. And we're doing this to gather 3D points in space. And sometimes it's used for analysis, sometimes it's used in archiving. Sometimes we're taking those 3D points and remapping them to something else, and we'll show you an example of the way BB is using remapping more than she's using anything for analysis or archiving. There are many kinds of motion capture systems. The motion capture system my lab has is the passive optical motion capture. And they all have their strengths and weaknesses. I'm not going to show all of those, but do know that the one that I'm showing you is only one kind, and there are other kinds that do things better and not as good as the system that we have. Our motion capture, like I said, is the optical motion capture system. Somebody dresses up in a tight suit, like the guy on the right, and puts these reflective balls on particular areas of the body. Usually it's like a marker set of about 40. Markers, although marker sets can be especially designed for the performer, depending on what it is they want to capture. We can also capture small details like faces, and in that case, you would put very tiny reflective balls on somebody's face and move the cameras in and capture that. It's a very high-speed capture, and the data is pretty accurate and can be used for scientific uses. Disadvantages are this problem of occlusion. So if somebody steps in front of somebody else and some of the cameras can't see that particular marker, it disappears. We have a 14-camera system. That means that the cameras are aligned in a circle in the lab. And as the person performs, at least 3 cameras need to see every point that's on the body or we lose it. So the image on the left is showing what it looks like inside the software. with the vectors from the cameras hitting a point on the body and giving that information back to the computer, and what results are these kind of funny dot images on the right side that look amazingly human with absolutely no connections in between them when you play them. And I think somebody has actually done studies on how many dots you need to see to be able to recognize human movement, and it's not a lot. So as I said, we do a lot of different kinds of capture. We work with both scientists and artists and all kinds of researchers doing capture in our lab. This is a capture we did, a still from a capture we did with Marcel Marceau, who wanted to keep part of his signature movements at Ohio State in our Theater Research Institute, which is the archive that Nina Couch runs at the Ohio State Libraries. And we have done a number of cultural dance captures, too. People were talking about those issues today, and this is just some of them. But you can see the artists. Marcel is in the bottom left corner. We did it, a Japanese drummer, and you can see, so there are props, too. You can see, actually, their sticks are markered with little balls on them, so we can keep track of where the sticks are while they're moving around also. So this is a screen capture of motion capture of Marcel Marceau doing his routine called At the Bar. I talked a little bit about yesterday about the fact that Marcel Marceau did not, he only wanted this data used in specific ways, so there was a contract developed between him and our archive to say how this data could be viewed, how it could be used, and how forever into the future we were allowed to access this data and make it visible. So it is not something that he was willing to put online and make the data points available to just anybody. You have to come to the university to look at it. Students study it and look at it often in the theater department. One of his proteges is a professor there. He also was very particular about never wanting to see 3D data attached to these points. So he didn't want to see himself as some character moving around on the screen. He just wanted this data saved as it was captured. So this is actually some Native American studies we did. This is a powwow dance called the Smoke Dance. This is Craig Marvin, who's a Mohawk from the Mohawk tribe. And first, we videotaped the dance with his regalia, and we cannot motion capture regalia. Then he dresses up in the motion capture suit and repeats the dance. And then the movements become that wireframe that we were just looking at before. And then we also have the ability to attach 3D data to it. And you can attach many kinds of three-dimensional data to the points. And this is just one that's sort of a default figure that comes with the system. This is also showing you, obviously, that you can move around the many points of view with the camera. So you can study the dance from underneath, on top, I mean, really any place in virtual space. This is Bibi's company performing in our lab, and Bibi, I don't know if you want to speak to what the intention was here.
Well, a lot of we worked for 2 weeks, kind of at the beginning of a creative process, trying to figure out what to do with motion capture, and at this point we're obviously just doing a dance phrase and seeing what it looks like. And what was so interesting to me is that the phrasing itself was much less interesting than watching and the dancers walk on and off and become human, and trying to notice that moment of intention shift. And so a lot of our process was more about trying to understand exactly what I was seeing and where that difference lied, and which was really something more about how our attention to our weight, going back to weight, shifted, weight and focus. And so, but it's one of those kinds of tools where you know what you're looking at, but you don't know what you're looking at and how else to look at it besides. So that is right in front of you. So it was a really interesting process.
Can I ask just a question? Just like, Part of dance is also expression, facial expressions, and you don't get this here. Is there a way to overlay the videos with the motion capture so you do get dance expression?
But then it's like the question is like, what do you want to see then? Mm-hmm. And one of the things we found out, our company is often known for partnering work and it can be really intense. And so we had Angie and Ted doing this duet that there's hardly any action, and it's like there's nothing there. So where did it go? Where's the essence of the dance? So that then, I mean, I think we could see the expressions, but that was less interesting for me, at least in this process, trying to figure out, well, where in the body does that vibe live? And is there something that can be quantified? But I think that, but in a similar way to the Marcel Marceau question of, like, at what level do we want to actually see imagery, and what do we want to see just sort of the quantification?
Can I just jump in and say that one of the issues with the DARPA defense people is that they're oversampling facial expressions and not getting much information. And one of the problems with this technology is that you're not getting, where does the breath begin? You know, what's the breath phrasing underneath? And because you're not capturing enough of the torso movement, you're not getting shape changes in the torso as well. And I noticed in the native dancer that, you know, the representation of him, which I realize is rough, has a lot more vertical stress in the torso than the dancer himself had. Mm-hmm. So there's stuff that gets added in because of stuff that's not captured. Mm-hmm. So there's some interesting shifts in there. So I would, you know, the number of dots that you're capturing in the torso is limited, and that's been a problem for decades.
Actually, the number of dots is not limited. And for Marcel Marceau, we designed a chest capture set of dots because much of what we do is breath-driven. Mm-hmm. So in that case, we tried to respond to what the artist wanted. Mm-hmm. But again, I'll say motion capture is not the be-all, end-all. Mm-hmm. It captures some things very well and some things it does not capture very well. And I think alongside other things, it creates a nice record. But it's a particular kind of record. It is not the record of the dance.
Yeah. Maria, I really appreciate what you're saying, because what I'm hearing from this conversation is twofold. One is, why are we looking? We always need to ask that, and that should drive how we're recording. The second is, when we use the multiple systems that we do have, we have a richer object. So what Karen's bringing out, you have at OSU, you can say, oh, wait, we're looking at the dancers live right now. We're looking at the motion capture. It's missing this. So when we go to replicate with a model or whatever else, we can bring that in because we were aware of it. Absolutely. And then we credit that source as well. That's one thing that happens with the Laban work, is it doesn't get credited because it's just considered movement observation. So just something to watch for.
We wrote a special purpose reader, which I did not bring today, that actually lines up the Laban notation next to the motion capture. So right now, motion capture, you have to have the software, right, to look at the motion capture. So we wrote a reader that anybody would be able to use if they had the motion capture data, and it sort of lines up those two things so you can see that happening. So we took Val Williams' notation, and then we ran that alongside motion capture as a way of trying to correlate those things, and then popped the video in there also so you could see the video of that motion capture.
Is there a standard open data format for motion capture?
Yes.
Like what is it called?
I don't know. I'll show you in a minute. There are a couple of kinds.
Okay.
Depends if you want skeletal data or just 3D points in space.
Right, but so there is at least some way in which you could take the data and transfer it from one application to another.
Yeah, and actually on our motion capture site, we have also made an open motion library. So we have brought in people to just do open motion in our lab, and we make that available to anyone as motion capture data. So you can take walks and runs and tumbles and jumps, and we credit who the artist is. As somebody else was saying too, sort of like the anthropologist works, all of this work, we have to run through our institutional review board. So we have IRB approval with a protocol to be able to do this work in our lab. And then when an artist comes in, they're signing all these consents and right then specifying how the data can be used or how it cannot be used before we do any of that, any of the work in the lab. So these things are sort of worked out ahead of time.
Are there different levels of consent
Absolutely.
That are built into that contract?
Yes. Yep.
From
you can do anything you want with it to very narrow restrictions.
To very narrow, no one may use this, give it back to me, and that's the end of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And anything in between.
What in general is the, is there a prevailing sense of choreographers, what they,
I would
the kind
say,
of access they
yes,
offer?
I would say that most choreographers have been willing to give access for research purposes, but not to hand somebody my 3D data points in space of my dance. They have not been interested in that kind of downloading my 3D data, but they have been happy to say looking at it is fine as some kind of reference or comparison, but not handing over the actual data.
Maria, did you want to talk a little bit about the generative motion that you talked about yesterday?
Yes. This is an example of the process Bibi was using, and this is what we would call remapping. So this you saw, we have motion capture, and then it becomes the skeletal 3D point data. But here it is remapped to some other figures, abstracted figures in space. Here it is, but now the camera is attached to one of those points, so I'm living inside the dance and seeing how it looks to other dancers in the dance in a very abstracted way. This is an exercise that BB did with dancers, and that motion gets mapped onto these houses that are part of a performance that BB was doing.
This is all from the piece Landing Place in 2005.
And Vita Berezina Blackburn is the animator on all of this. So here the figures become leaves on a tree. Here flocks of birds are attached to the points on a figure. And this is somebody's markered hand tracing a dancer laying on the floor. So we're just seeing the movement of the hand sculpting the body. So you can see there are different ways to use motion capture that become much, much more artistic adaptations of the data too, which BB was much more interested in.
Yeah, at a certain point I realized that I was trying to figure out all those small hesitations or decisions that we make in terms of our focus or intention, and that was leading our use. And I was interested in translating that away from the body, actually, to see if there was, you know, like a hesitating house. What does that look like? And our original, my original purpose was not to animate anything, not to use the imagery. I did get seduced a little bit. But just to find out what I could find out about how we move. And we realized that we made like something called the Invisible Friends Duet, where we captured one person was markered, and then their partner, and partnering was not, so that we could see like with a little heightened effort what somebody, how they were moving in space. It became really uninteresting when the marker dancer left the floor. Then you're kind of in the life forms mode of like no visible connection to the ground, and then it's just, you know, data. It lost its humanness. I'm just trying to figure out at what level did that go away, and where do you recognize peopleness.
So why don't we take a 10-minute break, and when we come back, Lisa will talk a little bit about her work with telepresence and some of the motion capture work she's been working on as well.